Welcome to The Culture's Money. The Culture's Money is a podcast created to discuss how we multiply the $1.2 trillion in spending power possessed by the American Black community through the vehicles of investing, personal finance, ownership, networking, and most importantly, collaboration. We are the culture, baby, and we are the financing that we've been seeking. Now, let's get into this money talk. And here's your host, Jamal Vitos.
This is episode 5 of The Culture's Money, a new episodic series podcast where we hope to educate you about financial literacy, financial investing, and financial freedom. Our goal here is to help you manage your money as best we can for your family to be generational wealth, generational freedom, and generational creation. I am your host, Jamal Vitos. Some of you may know me from other social media platforms as Leo Graham Prince. However you know me, I hope you know me as an advocate for financial literacy and financial growth. I'm very excited about this episode, it being the 5th episode. For those who don't know, 5 is one of my favorite numbers, actually. Being a church boy is a biblical thing, 5 being the number of grace, so I'm very excited about that. But also, it's the first time I'm having a guest on, and ironically enough, it is a female, which I think fits my life because women dominate my life, from my grandmother to my mother and all that. So I think I believe in everything happening for a reason. So I would like to introduce you guys to my guest. I consider her, she doesn't know, she's like my all the posts she makes, there's a lot of inspirational things going on her feed. I would like to introduce you guys to Miss Asia.
Hi, everyone. And that was such an honor. I didn't know I was considered your Twitter best friend. Good to know. Very good to know.
Yeah, I'll be looking, and you know, I really don't like Twitter people because their logic be out the window. I'll be like, this don't make no sense.
Yeah.
It makes no sense. But your stuff lately, especially like during this time, the pandemic with us being locked in, has been really inspirational. So that's why I consider that. So before we get started, introduce some things about yourself. Tell the listeners a little bit about yourself.
Yes. So as he mentioned, my name is Asia. I am the owner of IntechSheTrust.com, which was a website that I decided to go ahead and launch during COVID-19, just as a means to share resources, make sure folks like myself that are already in tech or interested in transitioning to tech, you know, stay productive during these times, utilize many of us are working from home and things of that nature. So just making sure we are, again, maintaining our productivity, making sure we have access to resources for certification and to continue to build our skill set in tech.
Okay, let's talk about the website first. How did you come about, like, what inspired you to launch that?
My inspiration actually came from, actually, to be honest, kind of feeling down when COVID started. I am one that is super sociable. I like to go out to eat. You know, I like to hang out with my friends and family and so forth. So I was one that kind of social distanced from the start. You know, I went out to the grocery store, overpacked, got all the water, got the toilet paper, got the paper towels, and kind of just stayed in the house. A week after that, I was like, okay, this is not real life. You know, I don't want to say it was like a depression, but it was a sadness that I couldn't really relate to, because again, I was always used to being on the go, you know, just having freedoms of traveling and, you know, in general, just being out and sociable. So during one of those little dark moments I had of, you know, being sick of being in the house, I said, you know what, let me turn this over to something positive. It has to be, you know, everything happens for a reason. Even with the COVID thing, you know, if God maintains my good health and things like that, let me come out of this situation better than when I went in. So at that point, that's when I, you know, started to get certifications for my own growth and so forth with my existing tech roles. But then I was like, you know what, this is information that other folks can utilize as well. When COVID actually came about, a lot of the IT vendors and so forth actually pushed out tons and tons of free resources from free courses. And some of these courses even included free certification upon completion of the course. So I went ahead and kind of, you know, just took note of all of these resources. And I, at first, I was doing these long Twitter threads. Again, how you said I was your Twitter best friend. I was just doing all of these long Twitter threads and they were going viral and things like that. So I was like, you know what? Let me just share and tell my story and let me make one central place for all of these resources to be found. So that's how Intexture Trust came about.
Okay. You touched on a couple of things that I think can be expanded on there a little bit. I want to talk about one, how you didn't hesitate to share the information that you had. And in this day and age, I find that a lot of us have knowledge, but we're either not willing to share it willingly because we don't think there's enough space or enough money to be made. So we hoard the information to protect ourselves. Mm-hmm. Or two, the information that we do share, our first instinct is to monetize it, which for me is always a drawback because us as a culture, we're already hindered. So for us to our first instincts to monetize it to get to other culture members always feels like it's a drawback for me first when we should share the information, the general information first. And then if someone needs more in-depth explanation, then that's where you can kind of offer your services. So what's your thinking on that? Is that why you kind of shared what inspired you just to kind of get the information out?
Well, before I made the website, I had already transitioned to tech a few years ago. So, you know, my entire take of it was, you know, through the grace of God, I kind of have already put my foot forward in tech. I was already in tech and things like that. So I think part of, you know, feeling comfortable with sharing resources is you have to acknowledge that helping someone else is not going to take away from you. Like me helping.
That's a bar.
Yeah. And I think that is what I like to keep myself mindful of, because I remember when I wanted to switch to tech, there were people that I needed. You know, I needed resources. I needed help. I kind of had a good grasp as to what I wanted to do. But you're going to always want someone, you know, who's already done it, who have already been down that path to just give you an A-OK. Like, does this make sense? Should I take this certification? You know, is this going to help me meet my end goal sort of thing? So again, in terms of, you know, wanting to hoard resources or, you know, should I sell these free links or, you know, how to go about it? What I will say, and I try to be real as possible, I am very much aware of God. I know it is Him that keeps me and my family, things like that, but I don't go to church. So when I made my website, I said, you know what? Because I don't go to church, I don't traditionally tithe and pay back. This is my way to pay my blessings forward.
That's an interest. I've never heard you put like that.
Yeah. So I try to be super aware because, you know, we've talked off the record about this. My transition to tech was not traditional. I did not, you know, go to get my undergrad degree. I kind of just did my own research, figured out what was the best path for me. Because when you talk to people and you typically tell people you want to go into tech, they tell you that CompTIA road of like Security Plus and Network Plus, and you're going to end up doing cybersecurity or networking, everything, which is fine, which is also lucrative. But I went the IT service management route where I just kind of make sure that existing products and services offered by IT is efficient, right? And is effective and adds value. So My first certification was actually ITIL. I don't know if, am I going too far off? I'm fine.
No, okay. Go ahead. Like I wanted to get into like how you non-traditionally got into tech anyway. So definitely go into how you did get there.
So like I was saying, when you tell people you want to get into tech, they kind of give you that CompTIA route. You know, you're starting off A+, Network Plus, Security Plus, and then you're going to be help desk. You know, not making the most money, and then you're going to just have to work your way up. So I respect that path. But at the time when I switched to tech, I was already, you know, a paralegal for the government. I was already kind of making decent money. I was already pretty comfortable. So I said, you know what? I can't start that route because at this rate, I'm 24, 25, right? So I'm not, you know, 18, 19, 20, where help desk salaries would be comfortable for me. I was like, if I start off that typical way, I'm going to make less than I was making as a paralegal. So I was like, okay, let me do research. Let me find out what the highest paying certifications are, you know, Google what they entail, what the prerequisites are, what does my educational background need to be? What type of roles will that certification put me in? So that's how I stumbled across ITIL or ITIL, depending on who you're talking to. Again, ITIL focuses on the best practices of delivering value through IT products and services. ITIL typically ranks within the 15 highest certifications on Forbes list. So I was like, okay, this is the one that I want to focus on. And because a lot of the ITIL roles are analytical, again, you're just, you know, monitoring, making sure things are efficient, making recommendations, researching, things like that. These were skills that I already possessed doing paralegal work. So I was like, okay, I can easily transfer over existing skills to get into tech, right? So that's kind of, you know, what I've been doing for the past couple years. I actually am a system administrator for an IT service management tool. And it's been very lucrative. At this point in time, I am starting to go back to get more technical certs that are, you know, cloud-based. I went back and got my AWS certification, a couple Oracle Cloud certifications. I currently possess my certified Scrum Master. So after ITIL and after I was working as a system administrator for 2 years, I did double back and get more technical certs. But I guess going back to your first question, yeah, my, again, because I don't pay tithes and stuff like that, I just wanted my story to be shared to help people, and especially to help young people to see, okay, I may not like college, but there's an alternate route. I can still attain six figures without going all of these traditional routes. And tech tends to be one of the areas that allows you to do so.
You touched on so much
that I'm so sorry.
No. It's good. Like, this is what the show is about a wealth of information. Yeah. What I want to maybe expand a little bit on is, one, maybe kind of go into briefly a little bit what you didn't like about college, and how that led you to your paralegal career, and then your, you know, how that, we heard how you transitioned to tech, but also speak a little bit to how it sounds like it was more you transitioning from paralegal to tech was a self-starting thing. Like, you were self-aware that you knew that, hey, my life is this comfortable. I don't want to give up salary comfortability just to start in a new field. And that research paid off to you. So talk about the mindset and the discipline it takes to not just take what I like to say. Reminds me of this saying where people, I tweeted something maybe a week ago that said, I don't know who needs to hear this, but go past the first page of Google.
Yeah.
Like, don't always take the first bit of information. Someone tells you this is the traditional way you had to start, because it's not, there's always a back door, a side door, a cracked window. So talk about those two things, about your college experience and how your, you know, mindset kind of helped you not start at the entry level of tech, but kind of start in the middle.
So for me, how can I explain this? I went to Catholic school, graduated National Honor Society in high school. I was always pretty smart. I'm trying to be humble in my wording.
Brags. Like,
okay, so this is one. So I was always pretty smart. You know, being, I think I'm considered a millennial. I think I am.
Yes, we are
the start of just technology, just always being around us anyway. We came up with Black Planet and MySpace and Fate. Like, we always had a gadget. We always were surfing online. You know, that's technology. At this point, technology is our comfort zone. You know, that's just that. So when I started out college, I started out majoring in interior design. And I actually got like a full scholarship to go to Marymount for interior design. My parents were like, that is nice that you know how to put stuff together, like, you know, color schemes and, you know how to pick out clothes and stuff like that. But we would like for you to take on a more serious major and maybe do interior design on the side. So at 18, where I was going to be, you know, rich, and this is in my head, you know, me thinking a couple years ago, I'm going to amass wealth doing interior design, and that's just going to be my life, and that's just that. So I did hear my parents back then. It made sense. So second semester, I did end up switching to a computer science major. I failed horribly. I was taking the craziest math courses, the craziest programming courses. You know, when you hear people say I passed with flying colors, I was failing with flying colors. And Because back then, I didn't live on campus, so I was commuting. That could have played a major role, because I always tell people my college experience wasn't typical. And not to say that, people who go to community college or people who commute back and forth, they get it done. But for me, it just was so many. It just was too many battles. Like, my school was in Virginia. I still lived in DC. So it would take an hour for me to get to class. It just was a lot of personal battles that didn't allow me to even meet my expectations or what I thought. It was inconvenient for me to go to like my professors, like study at, I'm not a typical college student. What is it called when you can go after hours and talk to your professors for help? I forgot what it's called. Office hours were always super inconvenient. Like, class would be on Monday and Wednesday. Then your office hours are at Thursday at 7 p.m. Like, I'm not driving to Virginia at 7 p.m. Like, no. And again, college is the best thing ever. My sister actually just graduated with her nursing degree, and I'm living vicariously through her. So please do not listen to this. Do not listen to this and say, oh my God, I'm not going to go to college. I'm just going to switch to IT. That's not what we're saying here. But so college for me was just a lot. So with me living in the DMV, we always have access to like government jobs, right? I've been working for the government since I was 16, actually. I came in starting out with the DC Summer Youth. I was assigned to like DC government agencies and things like that. So I like to think that kind of helped me transition on, as an adult, 18, 19, 20, when I started working for the government, like folks remembered me. They knew I was reliable. They knew I could figure out stuff quickly and stuff like that. That's another thing. Can I sidebar really quick? Okay.
Please.
So some jobs, high schoolers that you are able to work, especially if it's like in an office setting, or you're like an intern for, something you want to do long term or in the future, you're working a summer youth job or something like that, and it's for a government agency, you may not see the importance of it right then and there. But when you have a good work ethic, people remember you. So I think...
Talk about it.
One thing I do want to say, and it goes beyond, high school and a summer job, things like that. Just in general, you kind of want to just leave a positive remark on someone. Even if you don't care about what you're doing, you don't want to ever be disrespectful. You don't want to be known as someone who was not reliable, someone who was calling out, someone who, even if it's an internship, you don't want to be known as a person who didn't take you seriously, because at that point, if you're not interested, you just know you're not interested, and it's leading you to be disrespectful or not to take advantage of the opportunity. I would rather leave on a good note than continue to show up and have all of these bad reputations and so forth associated. So
I think the mentality, this is not to cut you off, but I think the mentality with people is, I always take this because my resume earlier on, like before I went to college, mine is kind of non-traditional like yours too. I didn't go to college until 23 fully. Like, I tried when I was 18, had a personal law, so I spent about 5 years just working. And my resume is just everywhere. Like, I worked for DOC, kind of like you, with different state jobs. I worked for TSA and all this other stuff. And people were like, you had to hate those jobs. I did. But to me, every job is a learning opportunity. Even if I can't stand it, I learned a lot of things. And imagine what I learned working for DOC and TSA. I learned a lot of patience. With DOC, I'm in there with murderers and all that. And you have to learn patience. I had to learn how to control my temper because the environment was hostile. And to some people that's not a good skill, but you and I working in corporate America,
you have to learn how to communicate with people, whether they're good people, whether they're bad people,
right?
Just having those interpersonal skills. Heck yeah. That's priceless.
Yeah, right. So go ahead, continue.
So what was I saying? Oh, okay. So like I said, when you're younger and you're presented with these internships and with these quick jobs and things like that, just try to go in with the best foot forward, because you never know who you're going to end up meeting or needing and seeing again in the future. So it was funny because my summer youth supervisor actually became my real life. I don't know how to explain it. My actual supervisor, like 3 years later, like she was the one who interviewed me and stuff like that. So when I realized she was interviewing me, I was like, oh, I already got this in the bag. Like, I had already, put in the work. And even again, these were summer jobs I was working. I would just go there my 6 hours and just have fun after or whatever like that. And I think I kind of display that on Twitter too, how I think I wear a lot of hats. Like I could be fun and then I could be professional. So, you know, just keeping in mind.
You definitely, have you read your bio talking about all this tech and stuff and then you say a sprinkle again?
Yes, we have to still be human and enjoy the fruits of our labor and have fun and listen to rap music. Like, yes, I'm all for that. But I want to make sure, did I miss any of your other questions? So you told me to talk about college and then...
We transition to the discipline. About your discipline, not to just accept the first answer about the traditional way to get into tech.
Okay, so this is also what I try to tell the folks who utilize my website. Initially, I did not want to do consults and so forth. I kind of just wanted to drop the information, you know, let people research and go figure it out. No matter how many resources I shared, people still had questions. So that's how I started to do.
And I'm telling you, that's what's any, and people never understand why I share so much free game with investing and finance, because they like, you're losing out on money. People still need me. People are willing to pay that consulting because the information that you share, it's just an introductory. It's basic. And you have those clients that you drop a little bit of information, kind of like you, they can take and run with it and build their own resource. That's fine. But 80% of them are going to need you to hold their hand and walk them through a good bulk of it. So it's nothing wrong with sharing it because it's going to come back and pay it forward to you.
It definitely will. So in terms of the discipline and just, you know, I kind of want to word it as taking the initiative to research stuff for my own self and not just be like, okay, I'm switching to tech. Let me go get Network Plus. I always knew I did not want to be extremely technical, you know, and I tell people this now. When you say that you want to get into tech and you want to get a certification, you have to research every aspect of that certification. And I say that because, and again, these are not to deter people or say that, you know, certain or traditional paths are wrong and things like that. It just was not for me. And I do find, and I'm going to answer the question, but one thing I do want to say is what I'm finding just from like being on Twitter and being more active, you know, as a Black person in technology, we are not exposed to the business analyst roles, the project manager roles, the product owner roles. We are just told to work help desk and work your way up. And, you know, folks that don't look like us are taking on more of the analytical roles as it relates to tech. And so by us being, and I hate to call it this too, because I had a kind of a debate on Twitter about it a couple of weeks ago where the non-technical people were arguing with the people that are more technical. It's not okay because I feel like can I speak on African Americans and Black people? Do you mind? Okay.
No, it's a culture. We want to be, there's no such thing as politically correct. We keep it.
Okay, I figured that, but I just wanted to make sure. So yeah, let me speak in how it relates to us, people who look like us. We are always super hands-on. And not to say in tech is a bad thing because the engineers are making a ton of money. Be hands-on. That's not what I'm saying. But I feel like for folks who look like us, we are always the mechanics. We are always, you know, just being super hands-on. We are always the technicians. You get what I mean? Like, we're always the working.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
The blue collar. Yeah. The blue collar.
So when
stuff,
I tell people that you can be a consultant for IT, they're like, I never even heard of that. I'm like, yeah, you know, in tech, we have business analysts. We have project managers. We have product owners. We have business writers. Like, we have people that document things that for years, you know, an agency or an organization uses that. We don't have to always be the ones that are fixing stuff. I think that's the missing link in terms of tech. And that's why when you know, talk to people about transitioning to tech, they're like, oh, do Network Plus, Security Plus, do that. They don't talk about ITIL. They don't talk about becoming a certified Scrum Master. They don't talk about these other areas of it.
And I think and I can relate to you with that because being in finance, I've had a lot of that where people were like, you know, go to customer service and all that. And I tell them all the time,
right.
No, I went to business school to be an analytical mind. Like, I don't, I'm not doing, no offense, I'm not doing the laborious part of it. It's just not, I don't even want to change my own tie. You think right. I'm going to go ahead and do customer service? Right. Like, no, thank you. Not saying that it's anything wrong for me, anything wrong with people who do that, but I have right. higher expectations like you. I want to run the team, run a project. And in my current job, I'm doing a lot of that. I have multiple projects that I'm managing for my firm because I put myself in that position where I am dependable. They know the quality of work they're going to get. And you put yourself in a position where you make it about your skill set, not right. you know, racial right. colors. But kind of like what you said, we're always geared towards that. It's like, let's not give them the too complex thing and all that. And I think a lot of that has to be with the perception that we're not exposed to technology right. till way late in the game. Way late, like kids, some other cultural, you know, kids are exposed 5, 6. I've heard stories of coders starting at 4 years old.
I see the YouTube comments now. I'm trying to learn JavaScript now, and I was reading the comments, and it was like an 11-year-old kid, like, I'm learning coding today for my future. I'm like, well, dang, no one told me to learn coding at 10. But yeah, I get it. Yeah.
Right. And I think it speaks to you. So I feel like you're giving such good game right here because people, they always, I'm just at the right. point, I've been working since I was 16. I don't look at, even if I change jobs and move to other firms, I completely ignore entry-level jobs. I don't care what it says or you got to start here
we
to work your way up.
Work no, your I don't. Way up. Culture. And I have talked to so many people about it. And it's like, you do not have to start from the bottom. We do not have to be Drake forever. The right. song is old. We are going to figure out, like, you just don't have to start from the bottom. Like, even, you know, when I started my transition to tech, when I got my first job as a system administrator, it was at the junior role, but I started out with such a high certification that at my junior level, I was already close to 6 figures. You don't have to start out help desk. And that's why I tell people, like, it's okay to, and I'm sure this relates in your field too. It's okay to just mm-hmm. have general knowledge of, you know, what the typical path is, you know, working your way from point A to point Z. But why not just figure out how to start at M and work your way to Z? Why we always have to work ourselves all right. the way up? So,
yeah. And I think that's the mentality. And probably, I don't know which stems from for you. With me, I have very much of an entrepreneurial onset. I feel like I've had some businesses, you know, some have failed, some a lot. But for me, having that mindset where I can start a business from scratch, I have a plethora right. of experience, management, operations, and all that. And when your mind works like that, you feel like you can jump in any field and jump in the middle. I may not know everything, but I know a little bit about a lot. And I know for right. sure I don't need to start at the front. I can start in the middle. And if need be, I can backtrack a little bit and get some basic information or jump forward and gather some of that and bring it all together. But I don't need to be all the way at the end. And I feel like that a lot of times is why we're so behind in the wealth gap. So behind in, you know, salary compensation, because they always, no matter whether it's transition or moving to another company, is always you got to start back at zero. For what? Why?
So is that just in our culture? Or do you think it exists in other cultures as well?
No, it's definitely in our culture. Definitely our culture. It's what's pushed on us. It's the mentality that a lot of us have adapted. It's the way that 20th century corporate America worked, you know, for the 20th century, but this is the 21st century. Technology makes it as though, I know people who watch 50 hours of a YouTube video, and then all of a sudden a subject matter expert, I mean, literally, can learn something and can jump into a field. So I don't feel that education in the traditional sense is what it used to be. It's not that structural campus building, you know, once you get out entry level thing. It's very broad and everyone's path is a lot different. And you spoke about something about, you know, getting the one certification and you being near 6 figures. And I've seen you tweet about you have a tangible salary goal and you're looking to make it. So that kind of brings me to financial literacy. How important, because a lot of times people, I see this all the time and I hate it. When people come to me, they like, one, I want to be rich from investing and all that. Okay, that's fine and well. What's your number? What will be comfortable for you? So how did you get to the salary number that you got to? And do you find that having a tangible goal, a hard number, makes it a lot easier than just some, you know, abstract, oh, I just want to be comfortable, but I really don't know what the number is?
So that's funny, because my current salary, I thought, you know, this would, honestly, let me back up a little bit before I answer your question. What God has blessed me to make now was kind of my goal at 30. But of course, if you know, become comfortable in the field, you continue to research, you see that it is possible to make more, you want to make more. I do think that having a number in my head just makes me better in terms of planning, you know, figuring out what additional certifications I need to gain, you know, what skill sets these jobs are looking for that pays that amount. And just, again, goes back to planning. So right now with COVID, I'm still working from home. I don't think we have any plans to actually physically go back to work until next year. Again, I'm maximizing all this time. So what I tell folks to use my site as well, like, it's okay to listen to what I say and things like that, but you have to research jobs. Even when you are, even before you're starting to study for a certification, and it doesn't even have to be a certification, whatever skill set you're trying to gain, research those jobs. So find out how much they're making at base and entry level. Look at how much it makes at a senior level and work your way toward that. Does that?
No.
Even with me as a system administrator, it hit me one day, probably a couple months ago. I'm the only system administrator on my team. I work on a team of four. The other three gentlemen are all considered to be engineers. They are probably making about $50,000 more than me a year, right? So I said, okay, what they're, I mean, 95% of our tasks are the same. We respond to the same tickets. We all answer the same ITSM mailbox. We are generally doing the same thing. What's allowing them to make $50,000 more than me? And this is just a ballpark number. I don't even, they may possibly make more. I don't even know. The only thing that's making a difference here with this salary is that they know programming. So I said, okay, I have to get this programming situation secured. Like, and when I say that, so I admin a system, they admin the system too, 95% of the time. About 2 to 3 times out of the year, they may have to do like an update to the system or, you know, a migration to a newer version, stuff like that. And the programming that they have to do behind the scenes may take an hour. So at this point, we're talking about three changes that happen within a whole year, and they may have to do some coding or something for an hour. That is costing me $50,000. Let's just exaggerate the number. Let's just say,
call it 100K.
Let's say 100K for 12 hours a year of work. This is costing me money.
I'm sick.
Now with COVID, I'm going back. I'm learning all of this database stuff. I'm going back learning programming and scripting. I have to get all my ducks in a row. This goes back to planning. This goes back to I have to hit this goal salary. This goes back to I am lacking in skills that is holding me back. It's a hindrance. So even though I'm not actively looking for jobs right now, I'm aware of what I need to do. That is going to help me to get to my goal salary.
You are saying so much right there. Like, I think, and maybe it's just me, and I always attribute a lot of this to my faith, but a lot of it to my grandmother. My grandmother made me very self-aware at a young age. Like, I always said that she talked to me and not at me from like the age of 4, as much as I can remember. So that gave me one, emotional IQ, but it also gave me intellectual IQ. So I know who I am. I know what my toxic traits are. I know what my strengths are, my weaknesses. So it's very easy for me to know what I'm missing, what I'm not good at. Even when I do business ventures, I always know that I should always partner with someone who may be creative and more of a marketer, because I'm more of an operational person. I like the day-to-day stuff. I don't like that whole, you know, shaping the narrative type crap. Like, it's not my thing. So hearing you speak, like, you know what you want to be. You even knew, you know, the engineers, what their skill set was that may have been costing you. Let's call it the conservative $50,000 a year for basically nothing, from what you're telling me. Besides that 12 hours out of the year, you guys are doing the exact same work, but a little different in, let's call it, title or rank or grade or whatever, you know, label the company's doing, it's costing you money. And and your mindset is so great, because I feel like some people would bitch and moan and say, oh, that's fucked up. The company doesn't appreciate me. I'm just going to put in a job resume and just move on, instead of making it someone else's fault or someone else's problem.
Yeah,
you take the 100%. Initiative to make it your problem. I need the skills. I need the, you know, I need to know what's this, that, and all that. And I think that is so key in this generation.
Can I give one more example? So,
and no, go ahead.
We're speaking about is outside of finance. It goes outside of tech. This is just across the board at this point. So but I am going to use my current situation if you guys don't mind. So even when you are an employee and you have a supervisor, the supervisor wants you to do reports, right? So even in that aspect, if someone is your supervisor, at some point, even as their employee or what have you, your roles and your day-to-day tasks tend to overlap as well, right? You know, they may answer to the same emails too. Mm-hmm. Of course, they, you know, get escalations and things like that, but they're still kind of doing what you're doing just at a supervisory level. So let's go back to the reporting example. So if you and your supervisor are doing, let's just say 75% of the same work, and the only differences between you and a supervisor is he or she is the one submitting the report, or, you know, whatever data that you're giving them, they're the ones that's submitting it, right? But we are still the ones that put the data and so forth into these reports to turn it into them. So even between that, you know, when I go back and I look at, let's just say someone that does work help desk, the difference between someone working help desk and the difference, you know, in their help desk supervisor or help desk analyst, they are still doing what a help desk person does. But they're the ones that's doing that's turning the report in and things like that. So even at that level, I think it's important for people to even be able to tell the difference between who they are and what their supervisor does. Because there are days that my supervisor's not at work and I'm doing his or her work. So I'm like, wait a minute, like all of these skills.
We've all been.
These people, you know, and again, it's just you have to have. Help me out. What I'm trying to say, you do have to have someone that answers. You have to have leaders, because it's just, you know, organizational structure. I totally get that.
Yeah, organizational structure.
When you look at your supervisor's job duties, you're doing 75% of that anyway. So why not take the initiative within yourself to figure out what that 25% difference is that's making them a supervisor and making you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you can make the leap in progress, right, and get the salary bump.
Even if you're not actively looking, it's just more so like, okay, let me figure out this skill set so that even, you know, I like my job, I'm comfortable now, but in 2 years, I want to be able to apply for a supervisor role over here. So let me figure out, you know, what that additional step is with my existing role and my supervisor that I like, and, you know, I like my job, I am comfortable, but let me figure out what that skill set difference is so that I can apply it in the future. So I think you have to start thinking like that too. What is costing you money? What is stopping you from taking that next step, sort of thing?
That's good. And I think it's so much, and maybe you've experienced this in tech. Do you find a lot of, you know, culture members, do you get the sense of a lot of fear, a lot of lack of confidence, a lot of, you know, maybe someone has kind of beat their self, you know, their self-esteem down?
Right.
I never get, because it's called self-esteem for a reason.
So when you were talking about the things that your grandmother kind of bestowed upon you and how you're self-aware and stuff like that, I immediately thought of confidence and self-esteem, because, you know, even wherever we start from, just acknowledging that, okay, I can do better. I know I can do that job. I know I can figure this out. So I do think that part of, you know, having the confidence to say, I'm not starting out entry level, you know, I want to go into finance, but I'm not starting out as a teller. I do think there's a certain confident component built into it. I do think there's a little bit of fear, or like I said, it could be generational, just down within our culture of like, we as people, we don't deserve to start out making $100,000 switching fields. Like, that's not what we do. We have to work. Like, and it goes back to what we said before. We have a start from the bottom mentality, and it goes back to lack of confidence. It goes back to lack of self-esteem. You know, it goes back to some people were not, you know, raised in homes that they were told they can do whatever they want to do. And they, I mean, I guess we can't touch on that too much, but going forward, we have.
No, you could, because it could, because I feel like,
yeah,
somewhere it gets lost in translation. Like, we grew up, you know, we're in the same generation. So we all grew up watching the same Disney movies where all the shows were empowering, mm-hmm. encouraging. You can be whatever you want in the world. And then somewhere in like those teen and early 20 years, someone tells you that,
yep.
okay, now you have to be realistic. Now you have to be rational. You have to be, you know, you got to take 20 stairs and you can't skip any. And I'm all about yes. the process. I'm all about the journey. I tell people all the time, in terms of entrepreneurship. And there's a reason why I started the show, because I feel like people were mm-hmm. selling the shine, but not selling the story. They weren't telling the people's story. And you gotta, some way it gets lost in there where they've lost the shine for real. They don't feel like they can reach for the brass ring. And I tell people all the time, like, my goal is $100 million network right. when it's all said and done by 50. And people are like, you know, Black people don't do that. Says who? I got a whole history book saying that, like, where you got Reginald F. Lewis and all that. I just refuse to let mm-hmm. the world tell me what I can't do and set limitations on how I have to do it. Because the expression is, there's more than one way to skin a cat. And just because someone got, they've seen people make money a certain way, or a bunch of people make money yeah. this way, they feel like that's the only way it can happen. Well, that's the only path that you can take. But it's not. I've seen people make money in a variety of ways in different industries. I mean, even in my own industry, they always hold up Warren Buffett, who has a policy of holding only 5 stocks at a time to, mm-hmm. you know, for an investment, or 5 to 10 companies at a time. But then there's a hedge fund that might hold 100 companies at a time. Or there's, you know, a day trader who might trade 1,000 trades in a day, and they're all right. making millions, and they all did it a different strategy. So I think that people get in this mindset that, yeah, you don't always right. have to reinvent the wheel. But I think people get in that mindset where they're stuck, where it's like, not reinventing the wheel doesn't mean that you can't take some core foundation from it.
Yeah.
And just tweak
this,
it.
Yeah, I agree 1,000%. I actually sent out an email to the folks who utilized my site last week. They love my emails.
They love your emails. They be talking about it. They be talking about it on the time.
I'm smiling so hard.
A lot of the tech people that follow you. No, for real. I follow them because, like I said, your Twitter feed is the energy I need. And the way that you tweet has inspired me. I've unfollowed like a good 700 people because the feed was yeah. just so toxic and dramatic that I was like, all right, let me just follow Asia and these tech people. So now I got you and the tech people. I got the real estate people. I got the finance people.
I got to go through your feed now.
And my feed, I'm loving it.
Yeah, but I need that. But, uh-huh.
So when you talk about your emails, like, your people be talking about it. They be like, oh, yes, I just got it. They be pumped. And to have that type yeah. of effect, like,
yeah,
you're really
because,
reaching me.
And even with my website, I did not want to come off as a stickler or very stiff. I wanted to come off genuine and personable, things like that. You know, and even in terms of my consultations, you know, within the services that I offer on my site, I tell people before I started, like, I drop the disclaimer as soon as I get on the call. Like, I don't charge people for follow-ups. I know that this 15-minute, 30-minute conversation is not going to change the whole course of your life and your transition. By all means, you have my direct cell phone number. Text me. If you need me to call you, I will call you. Again, just creating a personable exchange. Because like I said, when you're talking about something, you know, whether it be finances, whether it's transitioning a career, things like that, it's going to be stuff that people have to run through you all the time. So I kind of, you know, for now, mm-hmm. my site hasn't been up for 2 months, maybe about 45 days at this point. I launched on April 10th. I can see that in the future, if it just becomes like I'm talking to a lot of people, I will probably have to, you know, scale back. But for now, you know, I want to be super personable. I always want to be accessible to the folks who use my site, things like that. But going back to what you said, with reinventing the wheel and like, kind of like, how do I figure out not to start from the bottom? People need to be comfortable with mm-hmm. researching. Okay. And I try to be mm-hmm. really lighthearted and personable in my emails. Right. So I'm gonna just read part of what I said. I said, get comfortable with researching. there are times where I think people are scared to research. Like, does Google bite? Did YouTube scratch you in the eye? Did you leave Reddit with a migraine? Like, what is so scary about researching? And I told people that, I said, you know, very few of us are innovative, and that's fine. I said, but every path or the journey that we're on, someone else has did it before us, right? Someone else has documented this online for free that you can read about. You know, there may be someone who started out, you know, as a big financial person, you know, such as yourself, who started out as a teller, right? If you get comfortable with researching and you read their story, you're going to get to the folks that are like you, who are like, yeah, they might have started out, you know, as a teller, whatever, whatever. But the part that's going to get you is, oh, wow. So what changed their life is going back to school and they got a job doing this. And now they're able to do that. You know, reading someone else's story, you can kind of, you know, rule out or weed out, okay, I don't have to do this part of their story. Let me just jump straight to here and work my way. Research, like Google, is not going to kill you.
It's so telling, because people will read 1,500 tweets a day, but if I ask them the last book they read, they can't tell. Well, that's not their thing. And I don't want to get on my soapbox about, you know, I'm going to get on my soapbox about our culture not reading, because ooh, wow. I'm currently reading 7 books right now. People are like, what? I like to read one chapter at a time in a book, but I like to continuously read. So I'll read a chapter, meditate on that, but I'm also reading another chapter of a different book. But I'm constantly, to me, nothing makes me more proud knowing the history of our people and the things that we've invented, whether they were stolen from us and passed off as some other culture inventing them.
Yeah.
Nothing makes me more proud than being an intellect. I love having random information, and people, the best compliment people can say to me is, why do you just have that information in your head? Because I read the paper, I read the books, and reading kind of accelerated my finance career because I was investing before I went to got a finance degree. Like I told you, I went to school. I tried to go away when I graduated in 2005, something happened, I dropped out. And those 5 years from 2006 to about 2011, when I went back to college, I started investing. Bought Sprint, was my first stock. Really didn't know what I was doing, but I made some money. The fact that I made money made me research, like you said. I made money, but I didn't know why I made money. All I know is I bought the shares.
Oh wow!
Went up, and I made $3,500. I was like, okay, but I'm not sure why I made money.
I need to book a consult with you because I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No problem. We'll do it. But so that was the thing that drove me. So by the time I got back to college, and of course I did my 2 years of prerequisite, by the time I got a finance class, I knew a lot of the terms. So I was ahead of the game. Now, I didn't know the financial formulas, which I struggled with and had to learn, but I was ahead of the game because I was already technically in the field because I was investing personally. So I knew that part. I had already given myself some financial literacy, so I knew that part. So I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do as a career, and finance gave me the broad range of a lot of different things, because I could be an analyst, I can be a consultant, I can be a business consultant. It gave me such a breadth So to sum up what you're saying about reading edifies the mind. I don't think people get that. Like, your mind needs to be fed just like your stomach. And the stuff we feed it isn't always good. That's why I had to clean up my timeline, because if you notice, my tweets have changed a lot in the last couple of weeks while we've been locked in, because they haven't been as reckless as you.
That I will say. But I will say COVID has made everyone 1,000 times more productive than they were before. So, yes.
Right. And I realized and one of my good friends on Twitter, shout out to Todd Millionaire, like, his tweets and his followers and your tweets and your followers reminded me, it's like, Jamal, your timeline is toxic. It is feeding you the wrong crap because you're getting bottled down in these asinine discussions about who should spit rent and all this other crap. And I'm like, I am so sick of it. I was like, I got to clean this up. I'm telling you. So I was like, okay, cool. And since I've cleaned it up, I feel like you guys are feeding me one way. The books are feeding my spirit another way. So I'm getting it on all ends, and the podcast, other people's podcasts are feeding me another way. So I'm getting so flooded with good information and random information and stuff that's not even finance. People think I only read finance books. I've read, some of them courses, things that you're, I'm literally watching the video. I might not get the certification, but the fact that you tweeted and it gives me something else to, you know, digest and learn about gives me more, gives my mind something else to process. It might tweak the way I think just a little bit and give me a little bit, you know, more flavor. And I think that's what we all need to do is take the initiative, not to be stuck in the complacency, but constantly growing and going further.
When COVID, when all of this stuff first started out, I was so sad that I could not go to dinner and have three glasses of wine. And it just was, I was just very, very, very sad. But what I will say to piggyback off of what you just said, once you turn this time of not being able to do what we normally like to do and just being like, okay, let me be productive. Let me keep my vibes positive. Let me, you know, have a stream of positive information coming in.
You just gave me the title for this episode. I didn't know what I was going to name it. Yes. Let me be productive. That's what I'm going to name.
So it keeps going back of what you said before about being aware. Let me be aware of the information that I am consuming. Let me not sunk into a dark place. Let me, you know, just utilize this. And I feel like it's so funny because with us being in the house most of the time, it's giving us a chance to make new, what is the word I'm having? Habits. We are forming new habits. Right.
New habits.
Before COVID, I was in tech for a couple of years. I had one certification for most of that time. I did start the new year with a second certification, which I was gifted for Christmas. But you know, for years I had two certifications. So for me to be in the house for, I don't know, when did we really like shut down? Was it like March 16th or something like that?
It was like March. I saw you tweet yesterday. You said 2 months, five certs. I was like, Jesus.
Now, if Mastro's was open, RPM was open, Rose Bar was open, you know, all of these restaurants and lounges and, you know, clubs, because again, God has blessed me to be able to afford to do these things. My time would not have been as productive. And I already have noticed that even when normalcy kicks back in, I have already made these habits of I code every night for an hour, you know. I'm starting to pay attention to my IT newsletters and stuff that comes out. I am just soaking, again, just making, I haven't unfollowed people on social media. I haven't taken it that far. I may need to. So now I may do that.
I had to. Oh, yeah. You in DC. I'm in Baltimore. I gotta get some of the ratchets off to my timeline.
I don't know what the good part is, if it's east or west. I think you guys have like a back and forth and one, but yeah, one of you guys are, oh.
It's definitely east. Don't let them tell you.
Different. Got you.
Don't let them. East and downtown is the
good
side.
Back and just, you know, what I did do is I did unfollow Shade Room. I did that like a year ago because I was like, this is ridiculous. Like, I cannot feed into this. And it's is Shade Room black owned? I don't know if they're black owned or not, but it's a lot of black drama.
They sure bring a lot of black drama.
You know, I'd be into how many baby mamas a rapper has, and it has nothing to do with my life. And I just like, okay, going back to just stuff that does not even affect us, who's paying half of rent and who's not, like stuff like that does not even, it's cool here and there to just, you know, break up your mind, but you cannot have too much of that. You have to be aware of how much of it you're consuming. I mean, because we are,
right,
exactly, like it's cool because we are
human, right, it can't dominate your life,
living in real life, but you got to just be aware. But okay, so going back to what I was saying and, you know, piggybacking off of what you're saying, being in the house at this rate a little more than 2 months, I have made so many more positive why do I keep forgetting the word positive habits. Yes, so again, positive reading habits. I'm coding, I'm getting my certifications, I'm checking out jobs, even though I'm not actively looking for a new job now, I'm reading job descriptions, job postings. Oh, okay, like this is what this job is going to want. Let me start adding this somewhere to my study plan and stuff like that. So just, it's just giving me more time to plan. Going back to your financial stuff, since I'm in the house, I was able to pay down my credit cards.
You make my heart smile. Yes. I'm so happy for you. You make my heart smile. People don't realize how important credit utilization is. It is a good 35%.
Yes, yeah, so I'm getting all of those emails. Like, so that's very important. Hey, congratulations for paying that card off. Hey. And it just feels good. Like, not to say that our normal life was bad, but I am so much happier now. Like, I know when stuff reopens, it's going to be lit. It's just going to be good. I'm going to be in a better place. Again, with my finances, my credit cards, my savings, all of that, because I'm not spending as much money as I used to. I'm putting myself in a position so that whenever I am ready to get a new job, I have acquired all these other skills and certifications, and everything is good. Life is good.
We're almost at the 1 hour mark. I don't want to take too much. No, I don't want to take up too much of your time. And I just wanted to give you the last word to tell the listeners any drop of wisdom, anything you want to leave them with for, you know, You set the standard high. I have a bunch of guests signed up for the next. I think I'm booked for like all the way up to July. But you have set the standard for, you know, the conversations and what I expect from my guests, because it's authentic. That's what I wanted to give people. I don't want to give them the whole button up. These people really don't have any, you know, flaws, never been through anything. I can't relate to their life. You've given me so much that I feel like the listeners will be able to divulge. So give them a last little bit of drop and give them your Twitter handles and all that.
So you guys can find me on Twitter using the handle PrincessXAP. So PrincessXAP. Again, my website is In Tech She Trust. And as far as what I want to leave your listeners with, plan for your future. It goes back to what he's already doing in terms of your finances and things like that. You know, being aware that there is a future, like, you know, there, you know, if God gives us another day, making sure we're planning for tomorrow to be better, for 5 years from now to be better. You know, whether you're going to take the traditional routes, going to university, finishing those degrees and so forth, just being aware of, again, like what he mentioned before, what your comfort number is in terms of retirement, what your goal salaries are, what it's going to take for you to get there. Because I don't care what people say, money does make you happy. It makes you more comfortable. You know, you'll be less stressed. Life overall, you would be able to just enjoy life better. You know, you want to be able to travel. You want to be able to buy things that you like. You want to be able to, you know, when you have kids and so forth, they don't have to stress out and worry about money. You want to have them, you know, with their savings account, so that when they do want to go to college, they don't have to work 2 full-time jobs and stuff to get things done and so forth. You just want to make a comfortable life for you and for those to come after you. So just being mindful. Start planning, start figuring out what you need to do within your career, you know, your credit, your finances, things like that. Just being aware overall in terms of what your future needs to look like.
All right. Well, she said it all. I don't need to tell y'all anything else. This is episode 5 of The Culture is Money. We very much appreciate all the ears that's listening and everything like that. We thank Asia again for coming on to share her wisdom in the tech field as a woman, as a Black woman, and all of her experiences. I look forward to you guys on the next episodes coming up in the coming weeks. I have several guests that are really going to come on and give you guys and just pour into you. I believe in pouring into people's spirits and their minds just to make sure that all the information is helpful and great. So I look forward to you guys tuning in for those episodes.
That's right. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Culture's Money. You can follow Jamal on Instagram and Twitter at Leo Grand Prince. That's Leo Grand Prince. You can also get in contact with Jamal via Facebook and LinkedIn. Just type in his name. That's Jamal, J-A-M-A-A-L, Vitose, V-E-T-O-S-E. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time right here on The Culture's Money, baby.